You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Two quick sports-related kind of stories. Number one, congrats to Blue Spring South football team. USA Today has ranked them the preseason best high school football team in the state of Missouri.
Wow, good for them.
Blue Spring South.
Good.
That is correct. We told you, I believe it was yesterday or the day prior, about all the layoffs at ESPN, including big names like Carl Ravitch.
Yes.
Cam Newton.
They were blindsided.
Ryan Clark could not have been more blindsided. Ryan Clark was on the air when he was informed that he would be laid off during a commercial break.
Well, that's awkward.
Ran to the bathroom, scanned the key card. It kept showing up red. He's like, guys?
Okay. Yeah.
And then apparently TMZ published an article yesterday describing him as not being forced off the show, to which Ryan Clark says, I wasn't forced. I ask, should I be done now? The answer was yes.
No.
Yes. The answer was yes. You're done now.
We're going to go to some Sports Center reruns now. Pardon the change in programming.
Good Lord.
And Pat McAfee is getting a lot of grief for how much he makes because of the layoffs, saying, you know, do you feel guilty for how much they pay your show?
Nope. Don't ever feel guilty for what you are paid and what you are worth.
That is not, and I'm not a huge Pat McAfee fan. You guys know that. But that's not on him. That is on ESPN. And quite frankly, ESPN would not pay Pat McAfee that much money if he wasn't bringing in even more.
Well, you remember everybody freaked out when they heard the initial offer just to bring him onto the station, and they've since given him a raise from that initial offer.
What does he make?
It's like 80 or 90. It's a lot.
Million?
Look at what he brings in.
What does he do?
He's a sports talk show host. No, he's got his own show.
I know, but like he...
It's a talk show.
It's silly to argue whether or not he's worth that. He's worth that because that's what they paid him. Let me tell you what's going to happen in media. What's never going to happen in media is they're going to pay you that and you're not worth it. It's never going to happen.
Agreed.
Media is a business. It is a big business. And he would be out on his rear end the second he was not turning a profit for that company.
I guarantee you he never made $80 million in the NFL. He was a punter.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right on that.
Have they identified the Salvi ball in the fountain go-getter-er?
His name has not been provided, no. It's just a misdemeanor charge, so I don't know if that's one where we'll get the full report.
Carrington was saying out in the newsroom that he is charged with misdemeanor trespassing.
Yeah. Okay.
And there is a pretty robust argument online.
Robust.
Over whether or not it is worth it to catch the misdemeanor trespassing charge. If you got the Salvi ball.
My question is, why do they make such a big deal about the fountains? Why don't they make them so that you can go in?
Liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bingo.
Big liability.
There's liability of getting hit in the head with a ball.
But it's on the back of your ticket that they're not responsible for that.
We had a guy. We had a guy a year ago who reached over with his ball cap. He literally just leaned with his ball cap. Scooped the ball out of the water with his ball cap, was arrested.
And that's my point. Why not make it so that it's okay to get wet?
Because then you would have every drunk fan out there hopping in the fountains, and they don't want that either.
And you can put it on the back of the ticket that they're not liable, but if somebody cracks their skull open, their family's going to sue, whether that's on the back of the ticket
or not. With the new stadium, I think we're going to see fountains, but you are not going to see access to them.
And keep in mind, what would you have to write on the back? You can only go in the fountain if you're chasing a home run ball. Because Iowa fangirl went into the fountain, and if memory serves me correctly, was just in there because she wanted to be in the fountain.
Okay.
Not okay.
You can't. I mean, Dan, come on. You can't just have people jumping into the fountains at the...
Why not? Build them in a way that you can.
That would be called a swimming pool, and they would not want that liability either.
Sell tickets. Let people get into the fountains and watch.
Can we go to Caitlin Clark for a second?
Yeah, yes, please. I'm happy to do that.
What is going on?
She is a big fan of getting technical fouls. She is on the verge of getting a suspension from the WNBA. She has received her 7th technical foul of the season.
Widely described as, quote, a joke by the way. Caitlin Clark's latest technical foul, quote, was a joke, and that is Sports Illustrated.
So I watched the video. She went up for a shot. She got fouled by one player and then proceeded to get shoved by two players. At the time, they were up like 15, 20 points. What did she do to get a technical? You ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She pointed at the scoreboard and said, very calmly, look at the scoreboard.
That's just called trash talk.
She said she was locking me up the other player, so I said, scoreboard. The ref didn't like that.
That's a technical.
They are just picking on her.
And she's getting abused every single game by the players. I'm going to say it, and I'm being completely honest. If I were Caitlin Clark, I would leave the WNBA.
And go where?
Anywhere, because my sponsorships will follow me because I'm still incredible.
Quoting here, I am never going to back down. That intensity and that fire is what makes me me, but also knowing that my team needs me and finding a good balance of that. But I don't think I'm going to be playing with that in the back of my head. I think that may hinder my play a little. You can't play scared. Scared money don't make money.
No, scared money does not make money. But here's my question. Where are her teammates?
Well, Sophie Cunningham has been labeled, I think unfairly, her enforcer, her protector. Sophie's like, no, I'm not. I'm her teammate.
Because if she's getting, you know, beaten up during games,
yes.
You know,
she is getting punched in the throat.
Good God.
On live television. And it's not like hockey where, and I hear what you're saying, Scott, you know, I'd love it if her teammates would throw down for her, but then they're going to get technicals, they're going to get suspensions.
Fine. Then where is the head office of the WNBA?
That's why I would leave the league.
That's where it needs, yes, what that's a, where it needs to be addressed.
I'm bringing millions of dollars to your league and you're not protecting
I am the most identifiable star in your league. Why am I getting punched in the throat and nobody's getting fined for it? I mean, but Sam, she, you know, part of being a professional athlete is going up against the best in the business
yes.
at what you do. If she were to go over and play in a women's league, a women's basketball
France
league
or,
in Germany
yeah.
or Spain or whatever, it would be like playing against a bunch of high schoolers.
I get that. And I know for her, she never could because it's more about the competition than anything else. Mm-hmm. But if I'm showing up to work every single day and you and Dana are punching me in the face and HR is not doing anything about it, I'm going to go find a different job.
Wait, is that an option?
No.
No. I didn't mention you for a reason, Dan.
Hey, did you hear this? Malcolm Jamal Warner died tragically 1 year ago. It's been 1 year since we lost him. Now his widow is suing his mom.
Yeah. Read more.
1 year after the drowning death of Malcolm Jamal Warner, his widow, Tanisha Warner, has filed a lawsuit against the actor's mother, who oversees his trust. She is seeking more than $1.2 million in what she says are owed funds. The suit was filed Monday. The beloved actor died July 20th, 2025, in a drowning accident while vacationing in Costa Rica. He was 54. Warner and his wife married in 2022 and signed a prenuptial agreement. They'd only been married 3 years, okay? They share a daughter who has not been publicly named. The suit states that Warner had, quote, agreed to purchase and maintain a term life insurance policy on his life in the amount of $1 million, naming his wife as beneficiary, but failed to do so.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, there's more.
She also says that he failed to make an agreed upon payment to her of $16,000 per year on their marriage anniversaries, which now would total $50,000, and did not pay her a promised salary of $5,000 per month for acting as his, quote, chief of staff, which is $200,000. Add it all up, she wants $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. She is screwed.
Oh, she's totally screwed.
Just because someone says to you, you know what, I'm going to take care of you, babe. I'm going to go out and get a $1 million term life insurance policy, which at age 54 probably would have cost him $60 a month. He didn't do it. She's now turning around and suing mom for money because he didn't take out a life insurance. Mm-hmm. If you don't take out a life insurance, you don't get to go in through a side door over here and try to recoup that money.
There's a ton of things about this story I don't like. And you're right. Widow is screwed. And here's why. Number one, why did Malcolm Jamal Warner make his mom the trustee of his estate and not his wife?
She probably always was in the legal paperwork, and then they never updated it. Right.
And then he promised to give you $16,000 on your anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and $5,000 a month.
Yes.
And where's the proof of any of this other than you just said it?
If that was legally binding and if they had that written down somewhere, it still doesn't matter because he died. He agreed to give her $16,000 a month in life, not in death. Death was what the life insurance policy was for, which they never went out and signed the paperwork for. I'm not saying she's probably left high and dry with his child. I'm not saying she's not owed something, but this is another case of people not dotting their I's and crossing their T's with all of the things that you need to do up front just in case you go swimming in Costa Rica and don't resurface.
Do you have a will?
Yes.
Good.
And life insurance. And beneficiaries, and all of that stuff is updated, and all the kids know where it is. So I this always happens with famous people. I don't know why.
Does the wife have no stake, even if the will directly states that his mother will be the executor of the estate? Because
mom's the executor.
The trustee.
She's the trustee. I think that means she's got the keys to the castle.
Mm-hmm. Wife messed up.
Well, or he did not make sure if it was his intent to continue on those payments, that has to be written down. You can't go to a judge and say, well, he told me this.
Well, where are the receipts of a deposit that you must have made?
It doesn't matter. Even if he was doing that in life, there's nothing legally that says he had to keep doing it in death.
Well, and in life, he decided to keep his mom as the trustee of his estate. Who else famously died without a will?
Oh, there have been so many. Aretha Franklin.
Prince.
Yeah.
And now we have to put up with a bunch of records from Prince that suck.
See what you did? You got them on the Prince records again.
With that, we go to break.
Karen, I see what you're about to say. I double-checked your work, and you are absolutely right. Go ahead.
Hi. It was back in 1982. My father, at age 43, had a brain aneurysm. He had been single the majority of his life, and he made a will out and left my mom and my stepdad as executors. Well, about a year before he passed away, he married, and he never changed that will.
Ooh.
And he made the will, you know, my mom and my stepdad were executors, and everything else was to go to me. And, you know, so in the state of Missouri, you can't write your wife out of a will, and she got everything. I got nothing.
The new wife got everything despite the fact that the old wife was still the beneficiary?
She wasn't the beneficiary. Executor. She was the
executor.
Executor. Yeah, my mom was executor. My stepdad, in case I wasn't 21, and I wasn't. I was only 20 when he passed away. And, yeah, so she got everything. The house, the cars, tools. My dad was a race car driver, and yeah.
So that's not the way I read the Missouri law. And again, this was 40-something years ago, according to what you just said, and I'm sorry. But she is right. In Missouri, you cannot completely write your spouse out of an inheritance plan. State law gives a surviving spouse minimum rights, absolute minimum rights, to a portion of the estate. Even if a will explicitly leaves a spouse nothing, they retain the legal right to claim what's called an elective share.
Okay. And my guess is if you wanted to whittle that down to almost nothing, you would have to have a legal document that would have to be notarized. You know, you would have to do all of the things to prove that that was your intention.
But even in Missouri, you can't write your spouse out of the will. So an elective share is a spouse in Missouri can claim one half of the estate if there are no children. One third of the estate if there are surviving children.
Yes, thank you, text line. Aretha's will was found in a sofa, handwritten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a sofa cushion.
And after, 4 years in court or 5 years in court?
They took it.
They took it and ruled it was the more updated version.
Because when I wrote my will out, It was handwritten, and I stuffed it in the cushion of my couch.
That's what you do.
Especially when you're worth tens or hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's what you do. Mm-hmm.
You write it on a napkin.
Can't afford a lawyer.
No, absolutely not. You write it on a napkin, you fold it up, and then you cut a portion of the cushion in your couch, and you just shove it inside there. And then you don't tell anybody, but yet people know where to look. Mm-hmm. Weird. Story here from the Associated Press. Defaults on student loans have surged across the United States, reaching record levels as borrowers struggle to keep up with their payments. The numbers have spiked since payments came due again following a lengthy pause intended to provide relief during the COVID pandemic. Today, one in five federal student loan borrowers are in default. One in five, 20% are in default.
We knew this bubble was coming. We knew this.
Meaning that they are more than 9 months behind on their payments. Great.
Is it time that the government gets out of the college loan business?
Yes. No.
Oh. Okay. Tell me why.
One of the things that has happened in certain high graduate style professions, think med school, PA school, because they came in and tried to cap what you can borrow from federal loan programs at $50,000 a year, which is a joke if you are going to PA school, dental school. It's not going to happen. Okay. Even the cheapest in-state and you're living at home, I don't think that's going to happen for a professional degree. What that leaves students left with once they max out the federal loan in an area of study where you cannot have a full-time job and still go to school, med school, we would all agree, is that you are then kicked to the wolves to close the gap with a private loan. The terms are horrible. The interest rates are as high as some credit cards. We're only adding to the problem by trying to put a Band-Aid on the problem.
Well, why not get the federal government out of the student loan business and have the federal government dictate the terms of which...
Because if they're out of the business, how can they dictate the terms to a private company?
They do it all the time.
Yeah, you would have to have legislation. And I think they tried in Congress to do something good, but did not think it all the way through. Do I think you should be able to take out $400,000 in loans to get an undergraduate degree in journalism?
Art history?
No. No, I do not. But you also just can't blanket cap it either, because there are kids who are trying to go to high-level graduate programs again who, by the way, those default rates are so low. You go to med school and then become a doctor, the percentage of kids who default on those loans, even though they're higher, $200,000 or more, is almost nothing, Scott.
Go ahead, Sam.
Can I go squirrel back to Wills for just a second?
Please.
Text line brought up a very interesting story. So apparently when you write your will and sign it before your death, like Aretha Franklin, it's called a holographic will. The most famous case is from Canada, but still applies, from 1948. A farmer was out on his own.
Okay.
Something happened. He got stuck between a hard place and his tractor.
Oh.
He pulled his pocket knife out of his pocket. He carved into the fender of the tractor, quote, "In case I die in this mess, I leave all that I have to my wife," and signed his name.
Yeah.
It stood in court.
With a knife.
I remember that. I remember that case.
He carved his will into the side of the tractor that was pinning him and killing him, saying, "I leave everything I have to my wife," and the court took it.
Did he really write, "In case I die in this mess"?
It literally read, and by the way, this tractor fender is in a museum in Canada still to this day.
With that on it.
"In case I die in this mess, I leave all to the wife."
Okay, if you're dying, why would you even add "in this mess"?
Yeah, I would consolidate the lettering.
The sentence is way too long.
What else was he going to do?
I don't know. Save the last few breaths he had for something more.
"In this mess" is unnecessary.
Important. Get rid of that. I agree.
"If I die, ... I give everything to my wife." Quit wasting words.
Give all to wife.
His name, by the way, is Cecil Geo Harris.
Did he put his middle name on there?
He did.
Unnecessary.
Too much.
913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks.
I'm no white collar criminal.
Okay.
But every once in a while, we'll get like a release from the U.S. Attorney's Office or whatever that someone is about to be sentenced for swindling people out of like millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. I never understand when an investor comes to you and says, I need $500,000, mm-hmm. and you are a scammer. At what point before someone writes a check to you for $300,000 or $500,000, is there no checking and balancing of whether or not this is legitimate? Listen, you're not going to believe this, but you're going to believe it because it happens all the time and I don't understand how. A 29-year-old Lee's Summit man could face charges of defrauding at least 24 people out of more than $2 million in the last 2.5 years. Okay. The documents state that Trevor Ulls allegedly used promissory notes, literally IOU, mm-hmm. to promise investors a return over a 30, 60, or 90-day time frame with 10 to 15% gains. There's your first red flag.
Yeah.
The court documents state, although some investors received a complete return on their investments, the majority of them did not because it was a Ponzi scheme. In addition, some investors only got a fraction of their initial investment back. SEC got involved and started looking into this. So it turns out Ulls lived in an apartment in Lee's Summit.
Okay.
I'm not saying that you cannot be a multimillionaire and live in an apartment in Lee's Summit.
Maybe he practiced a frugal lifestyle.
Okay. He also had a business name that he told his investors, who were very interested in investing, that he was Trevor Ulls LLC and Midwest Homes. That's not a registered business. Red flag number two. Despite the investigation against him, he then went on, according to court documents, once he was being investigated by the SEC, to defraud three more victims. Mm-hmm. Victim number one for $40,000. Victim number two for $300,000. And victim number three, $500,000, as Ulls was being investigated at age 29 by the SEC. Of the $500,000 victim three gave him, he got $25,000 back. Ulls turned around and used that money to make a credit card payment for more than $800,000 in a credit card payment.
Wow.
And then spent more than $600,000 on sports bets despite not having a single legitimate source of income. Guess what else he did? He spent $23,000 for chartered private jets. You know why? He was trying to show them
that he was rich.
Come on my jet.
Successful, yes.
I'm going to have you meet me in my apartment in Lee's Summit. And then we're going to leave from there and Uber to my private jet. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to victim blame here, but I am going to say a couple of things.
Go ahead.
If someone came to you and said, I would like to borrow $500,000 and in 60 to 90 days, I'm going to write this down on a promissory note right here out of my apartment in Lee's Summit. I'm going to give you a 10 to 12 to 15 to 20% return in 90 days. Here's a promissory note.
Thank you.
In what world does someone go, yeah, I'll bite on that?
Sam,
he got a jet.
Sam, what do I often say?
Fools and their money.
Mm-hmm. Or what?
I think it's something about like parted easily or something like that.
Easily parted. Oh, that is correct. Fools and their money are easily parted. That is correct.
Have they not watched the documentary about Bernie Madoff?
Do you remember some of the names? Because I have them in front of me that Bernie Madoff convinced, hey, if you'll just invest with me.
Everyone was doing it.
Can you remember some of the names?
Kevin Bacon.
That is correct. And his wife.
The Jewish Foundation or Federation of California or New York.
So was Elie Wiesel.
Yep, Elie Wiesel. There are multiple large names on that.
Tell me if you know any of these names. Larry King.
Yes.
Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Sandy Koufax.
Yes. A lot of people in the Jewish community.
All invested with Bernie Madoff.
Because everyone around them was doing it too. This is a 29-year-old dingbat.
But what? Wait. You keep going back to his age. First of all, the investors would never have known that he was living in an apartment. And that might have been, well.
You just assume on its face that someone is going to pick you up in a private jet and without even looking to see if their company is registered, which it was not. For $500,000, Scott, if you said to me, I want you to give me $5,000 and here's my LLC, I would be going to the Kansas Secretary of State's website and looking you up.
I understand. First of all, I don't think his investors would know that he lived in an apartment. I invest with a very large firm here in Kansas City, okay? And I'm not going to say, let's just say that the guy who is my financial planner, let's say his name is Mitch.
That's different. That's with a firm. This is just a 29-year-old guy with no money that was like, hey, do you mind? Can I have $500,000? The guy was like, sure.
Well, he was clearly very convincing.
I'm not victim blaming here, but I am. I'm sorry.
And I would, my guess would be the person who gave him $500,000 probably had $5 million more.
Right. Well, now he has $25,000 back, which means he's got $475,000 that went on to perpetuate the scheme.
Correct.
I will never understand how this happened. With Bernie Madoff, Scott, you have to remember, Bernie was the chair of the SEC before he went down. So everyone thought, well, of course he knows the rules. He wrote the rules. He actually wrote the rules.
And knows how to break them.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But how do people fall for fly-by-night roofing companies that come into town after a hailstorm or, you know,
someone that takes their moving furniture away and holds it hostage, I guess. But I just, to me, when you're dealing with that kind of money, would you not do a little bit of due diligence?
Well, wait a minute.
Just because someone claims they have a private jet, which you can literally rent. Anyone can rent a private jet now.
Well, who would hire a moving company and have them hold their furniture hostage?
Just saying.
I mean, who would do that?
It's been known to happen.
Where would they keep it hostage?
Oh, Al says it was the president. Yeah, Al's probably right.
Let's go. Al, hello.
He was brilliant, Al.
Hi.
Yes.
Yeah, my comment, Bernie Madoff actually had been something like president of the NASDAQ or some offices which gave him credence, and then he just went bad.
Yep.
It wasn't like the kid that has a tiny apartment and rents a jet.
Al, one of the things that has fascinated with me every single time I watch any documentary on Bernie Madoff is his the gall you would have to have, and how could you live with yourself with that level of anxiety, knowing that if one or two or three people came to you and wanted to pull the money out, that house of cards is going to collapse like tissue paper. And that's how it all came to be. It was 2008. The market started going south. Everyone called Bernie and said, hey, I want to pull some of my money out. Mm-hmm. Well, he could handle one person pulling the money out.
Yep.
He couldn't handle 10 people pulling the money out.
So before he started Madoff Investment Securities, he was the chairman of NASDAQ. And on December 10th, 2008, Madoff's sons, Mark and Andrew, told authorities that their father had confessed to them that the asset management unit of his firm was a massive Ponzi scheme and quoted him as saying it was, quote, big lie.
Let me tell you what else the folks that gave their money to Bernie probably should have asked about. Anytime you would ask for a statement, you know, even if you're with Vanguard, wherever your 401k money is, you can go online and see a statement.
Correct.
In the 2000s, when this whole thing was going on, he never sent out a single statement. No one had online access to their statement. He would just say, oh, you got $50 million in there. You're doing good. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. When people would press him and say, I want to see a statement, they were printing them off on that 27th floor where his sons worked on a dot matrix printer. Do you remember those printers? They go green, white, the printer paper.
Yeah.
With the holes in the edges on the sides.
Yes, I remember those.
He would send that out, a dot matrix printer, and it would just show, you started with $20 million with me, and now you've got 56. And no one thought that seemed odd.
Scott remembers dot matrix because he still uses it.
I'm old school.
Accurate.
Shut up, Sam. 913-586-7798. 586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott. You're on KMBZ.
A KU student, sadly, has been charged with selling wristbands to underage victims on the night of that horrible, deadly bar shooting in Lawrence. According to Douglas County charging documents, Hunter J. Norvong faces four counts of purchase or consumption of an alcoholic beverage by a minor. It is a Class C non-person misdemeanor. Investigators say on the night of January 17th, when the shooting happened at the Hawk, Norvong sold wristbands to multiple people under 21 years old, allowing them to enter into the popular college bar in downtown. Two of the people he allegedly sold the wristbands to were 18-year-old Aiden Knowles and then 16-year-old Brady Clark. Both teens ended up being shot outside of the bar. As you remember, Knowles died at the scene. Mm-hmm. Clark was left with critical injuries. They were one of many underage group members who purchased wristbands on the night of that shooting.
Wow. And I bet that happens at just about every bar in every college town in America.
I think you're right, but I think after something like this, I would like to think changes. In fact, I know for a fact after that, at that specific spot, changes were made because one of my children was friends with someone who worked there. Because you can't have it. You just can't have it. The side door entry with the teenager coming in the side, you know.
I didn't even know there was a side. I've been to the Hawk 1,000 times, you know, not obviously in the last several decades, but
since
I didn't even... Go ahead.
Since you were there last, they did expand, and so that side door is part of the expansion.
Okay.
Too open.
Is Bullwinkle's still...
The Bull?
Is,
yes.
Is it still behind
still
the Hawk?
There? Yes.
Okay. Would you care to guess, maybe you already know, the leading cause of cancer deaths in American women? Which cancer kills more women in America than the others?
Is it melanoma?
It is not.
Is it breast?
It is not. This cancer... kills more women in America. Where is it here? It's in here somewhere. Than breast cancer, I believe ovarian cancer, and pancreatic cancer. Kills more women in America.
Wow. Lung?
Than breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, and ovarian cancer combined. It is lung cancer.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I would not have guessed that.
From CBS News, lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in American women, and a growing share of new cases are in women who have never smoked. Former YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki, I think, or Siki, forgive me, was one of those women, a non-smoker. She died nearly 2 years ago of lung cancer at the age of 56.
God.
Mm-hmm. Lung cancer, if caught in stages one or two, have a survival rate of 81%. Anything past stages one or two, 10% chance of survival.
That viral video from the Chicago Cubs game at Wrigley that showed an older veteran smacking the back of a young spectator's head when the kid did not stand for the national anthem.
It was a mollywhopping.
It was a molly whopping. Thank you,
yep,
Sam.
Yep, you're welcome.
Haven't heard that in a while.
He has been identified because this divided the internet big time. Mm-hmm. He is Bob Chavez, a Vietnam War veteran who confronted the seated young man and told him stand up before smacking him in the head. Chavez later stated he overreacted out of emotion, but that the two men reconciled later in the game, shook hands, and the younger fan even bought him a beer and talked security out of ejecting him.
Good for that young man.
The video sparked a heavy online debate regarding patriotism, personal rights, and physical assault.
So he will not be charged?
I haven't read that, but I haven't read that he has been charged either. So
if he elects the recipient of said mollywhopping elects not to press charges, then he cannot be charged, correct? The state can't step in, or the county can't step in and say, well, we got it on camera.
You would need a victim.
Yeah.
And if he says, I'm not a victim, then where's the crime? But.
He says there's important context missing from the initial video as the two later apologized and made amends.
Well, he shouldn't have hit the kid anyway. Way over the line, but okay. I can understand his passion and I can respect his service. And still think that what he did was wrong. And hitting somebody upside the back of their head because they're not doing something that you, because they're doing something you don't like is not right. When we get back, Sam had something off the air to share, and it was a story in our stack a couple of days ago. We never got to it. Have things gotten that bad for Sporting KC? We'll get to that in just a moment here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.